and Carrie, who are who are our hostesses this evening. It's just, I love this place. I discovered it before Christmas, and I've been coming back on a regular basis. It is ahead of the curve on retail, I think. It's kind of books, it's good coffee, it's fantastic, just candles and jam and just, it's full
and
of stuff.
And great photographs.
And great photographs, it's just
and
brilliant.
And the wild party, they have the wild party.
I know, and it's kind of why it's brilliant.
And your books.
I'm not going to sell Babette and Carrie anymore, but you should talk to them because they're deeply interesting and beautiful and lovely women running a gorgeous place. And I'm very, very happy to be here with some people I know, my BAP homies, and some people I don't know, and guests and other people. I can't really think that you want to hear much about a half-baked business idea, but here we go. This time last year, I was struggling, desperately trying to get rid of this stone in my shoe. It's a sort of stone in my shoe that I've had for the last 10 years since I left publishing, which is that publishing, by all rights, ought to be the most fantastic industry in the world. If you think about what publishing sells, it sells ideas and stories, which surely is the kind of, that's got to be the highest calling of any human trade of all, isn't it? The things that sustain us, you know, in the darkest moments, the things that we use to celebrate our happiest moments. Who wouldn't want to be involved in books? And yet, are there any publishers here? Anyone I know who works in publishing? Apart from Carrie. Carrie will tell you this, but it's the most miserable fucking industry on the face of the planet. I have never known. For the 10 years... Yeah, exactly. Why does Carrie moonlight? She's working as a top literary agent. I ought to say that Carrie... I mean, not only is she a publisher, she ran a great, great list, Harper Perennial in the US. And she's a proper, big, grown-up US publisher. But she's here in the same way that I'm here, the same way that a lot of us are refugees from the traditional publishing industry, because there is something fundamentally wrong with the way that books are, the way that the industry is configured. There's nothing wrong with books. And in the long run, I think publishing will win, because in the end, it's the stories and the ideas that will live. But we're going through an interesting moment. Can you imagine any other industry in the world if they said, you know your product? We found a way to give it to everybody in the world instantaneously for no added cost. Can you imagine any other industry in the world where that would be seen as a disaster? Where that would be seen as a deep and profound threat? That is the industry that I decided. Well, of course, music is a good analogy, except in a funny kind of way. I just want the pop now. I just need the pop. We started in the way that so many things start in life. Three disgruntled writers sitting in a pub saying, there were two reasons. My friend Dan Kieran, who's a journalist and has published 9 books, had a book turned down by, I think I can tell you, by John Murray, part of the Hachette Group, for being too intelligent for the audience that he was trying to communicate with. And on the other equation, Justin Pollard, a historian who's also strangely written 8 books, was sitting with a wad of History Today articles that he had negotiated and written himself that had been sent to him by his publicist as an example of the publicity that she'd been managing to get for his latest book. In two ways, that sort of told you that this is an industry that was slightly losing its way. It's very, very difficult to get published. Everybody will tell you that. And it's true that it is difficult to get published, and the industry is a sort of full of people basically either saying no or telling lies. And I did it for a long time, and in the end I left it because I kind of couldn't stand the sense of... Stephen and I were just talking about the year where we both got sacked. We both got sacked pretty much for the same reason, as we'd published a book that hadn't done as well as expected. But we had a fantastic blast of a time publishing it. And actually, in a funny kind of way, this story comes full circle, because one of the authors of that book ended up being a writer on one of the Unbound books that we've done 10 years later. But it was, I gave Stephen the most ridiculously large amount of money to produce this book. We did all sorts of fantastic things. We produced the book. We did a tie-in CD with Sony Records. We did an exhibition. We did a DVD. We sold it in 4 different languages. We sold it to America. But for one reason or another, in the sort of narrow way it was the publishing accounting worked at that time, we hadn't earned out, and it was used as a stick to beat me, used as a stick to beat Stephen. As we say, one of the writers on the book died, so at least we... at least we're still kind of hanging in there. Anyway,
this was a happy ending.
It sort of is a happy ending. So we just thought you ought to start from a different premise. If you think about it, it is kind of mad. You come to me as an author. I like what you're doing. If I can get it through the labyrinthine, meetings, this can go on for months, meeting after meeting, and then finally I give you £20,000, and then I print £5,000. Nobody knows who you are. I stick those 5,000 copies out into bookshops. Nothing happens, nobody buys it because nobody knows that it exists. Those books get returned. They get returned at full value to the publisher. I then look, I've given you £20,000, I've sold nothing. It's an exercise in futility, because I'm not going to give you any more money to publish another book. And nobody, at this point, it's not really whether the book's any good or not. It's just the way that the structure of it works is, who would know? If you don't have the money spent on you to promote. And the simple truth of the matter is, I mean, the statistics, I'll cut to the chase. 1 out of 5 books earns back its advance. An average publishing company, 94% of the books get less than 2% of the marketing spend. I mean, it's that extreme, okay? So even if you get a book deal, and it's really hard to get a book deal, the chances of your book working are fewer than 1 in 5. A quarter of all the books that are printed each year are destroyed. So, I mean, just in terms of waste, it's an incredibly wasteful industry. So what we started from is, if you had a blank sheet of paper, how might you go about trying to make this better? And I know plenty of people I have to declare I've spent my last 10 years working on a successful TV show. The QI books have sold across the world nearly 2 million copies. We've made good money out of that. I'm not saying that the traditional model is completely fucked. I'm just saying it's mostly fucked for most writers. So we started with a different premise, which is, why not try and find readers directly for writers by getting them to pitch ideas, getting support for those ideas before you actually publish the books. And that's sort of how we started. And that's sort of what Unbound is. The truth is that most of the people that we're selling have come to us with semi-finished or mostly finished, or even in some cases completely finished books. So it's not like we're really pitching ideas. We're pitching quite well-formed ideas. But it's still, the simple premise is, you find something you like, you can pledge a small amount of money, or you can pledge a large amount of money for different rewards. And if you if we hit a target, which we sort of negotiate and work out with the author or the author's agent, then the book can go ahead. And what that means is, we can put in a small advance, we can put a big advance. It just takes longer to get to the break-even point for the project. But what it means is, when you do finally have a book that goes into the trade, most of the costs of that have already been taken out of the equation. So for the people who pledge, they get their names printed in the back of the book as patrons and subscribers, which is, of course, an extremely old idea. 18th century publishing used to work on this basis. Dr. Johnson wants to publish a dictionary. He tries to get people to fund that dictionary before he starts the work. And this is the inversion that we said. Now, with social media, with the fact that we can talk to lots of people simultaneously, it becomes relatively easy again to put writers in direct contact with readers. And that's kind of far more for me than the digital thing, which I think the digital revolution is, it is the big thing. since Gutenberg. This is suddenly. It's not that digital editions of books are cheaper. It's that they cost really nothing. I mean, to send someone an e-book costs you nothing. It costs a bit of money to do, although publishers, frankly, go on rather too much about just how expensive it is to produce an e-book when you consider that most of the e-books are shit. I bought Claire Tomlin's Dickens as an e-book. Distress purchase, late at night, needed to read it. It cost me £18. It doesn't even have an index. This is what annoys me about the way the world works now. Because some idiot in their digital department, and, you know, without being rude, what traditional publishers do is they put young kids in charge of their digital departments because that seems like a sensible thing to do. And you think, why would you need an index? Because you can just search for any of the terms that you're looking for. So if you're, like me, wanting to fill it an index because you have a quiz to deliver to the Telegraph the next day on Dickens, it's really annoying to have spent £18 and discover that they just left the index out because they could. That's kind of where we are with at the moment. E-books are, I mean, I've got a Kindle. I love it. I can't imagine anybody who doesn't love books wouldn't want to have a Kindle as well. It's a sort of non-argument for me. Why do we have to have this sort of digital versus print? Everybody who reads. The one thing I did discover in my years at Waterstones is we used to do lots of mostly pointless research, but the one that really that struck home was that readers are promiscuous. They will buy, people who love books will buy books anywhere. They'll buy them in kind of horrible little bookshops on seafronts. They'll buy them in Waterstones. They'll buy them in Smiths. They'll buy them wherever there are books to be sold. And it's exactly the same, I think, with e-books. Why wouldn't you have one? You just want to have both. What we do with Unbound is if you buy a hardback, you get an e-book for free. What we try and do is to bundle e-books into everything. But what we are doing is trying to work on making those e-books more interesting. So we can be heroes. We haven't done the e-book of that yet, but it will be coming out before the end of the year, and it will have music in it, it will have film in it, it will be a completely different. It will probably cost more than £2.99, and maybe that will cause us problems. Maybe people won't want to pay for it. But if you look at the really interesting stuff that's happening, the Wasteland app, which I think has now sold something like 50,000 units worldwide, that Faber have done, it's a poem by T.S. Eliot. You can buy it. You can download it for nothing from the internet. Why would you want to buy an enhanced edition? Because it's great. Because it's interesting. Because that's kind of the problem. We go back to the original point. We have the best product in the world. You know, you don't have to give it away. You don't have to give it away. You can give it away. And I think one of the things that's where we are at the moment is a very interesting. It's a really interesting moment because we're trying to do two things that are completely impossible. What people say they want, okay? They don't want gatekeepers anymore. They want to be able to choose. And that's true. That's what we all sort of feel. We don't want to be just forced to read the books that publishers tell us are the ones we should read. At the same time, we also want to be delivered from the mass of crap that are put, you know, that when anyone goes onto the internet, you just tell me what's good. You want editorial judgment. You can see that there is a kind of a, there's a sort of a, and what we're trying to do, I suppose, is to weave a way through that. Here's stuff that you get to be you get to decide whether or not this goes ahead, because you are the people, in the end, the readers are the people that count. But at the same time, we do have to do a bit of selection. And if we've had any criticism this year, it's been that why don't you open your gates wider? And it's true, each time as our list of subscribers get bigger, we can open it wider. And one of the people I've invited along tonight is a guy called Jack Lennox, who has a brilliant site called Jotify. And Jack is doing exactly what we can't quite do. It's called Jotify.com. It's a site essentially for writers, where writers can go up and put stuff on there. And some of it is complete shit, I think Jack would be prepared to say. Some of it is not complete shit. In fact, we're about to announce our first it's a kind of a feeding chain thing. We find stuff on Jotify. We have a sort of partnership that's brilliant. We've got one book already funded from another site similar to Jotify, although not as good in my view, called ABC Tales, by a first-time writer called Jenny Pickup. We've got another amazing book called Conversations with Spirits that's come through Jack's site. That's going on to Unbound in a couple of weeks. So the idea is that we can do famous people really well. Terry Jones was the first author we did, Monty Python. Everybody says, why would Terry Jones need help? Why would Terry Jones? Couldn't he walk into any publishing house in the country? No. He was told by three publishing houses that they didn't want a collection of stories on machines that took over the world. It was just there was no market for it. And maybe they're right. But we've raised £30,000 that enabled us to produce a handsome edition over there for how much, Carrie?
£20 signed.
For £20 signed, there you go.
Cheapest.
It's collector's edition now, of course, limited edition. Well, the point being that we wanted to produce, it works for the Terry Joneses of this world, it works for the Tibor Fishers, also over there in the corner, but it also, we hope, works for the people at the other end of the spectrum, because it means that our barrier to entry is much lower. We only need to raise £5,000 or £6,000 for some books in order to produce a book that we can get into bookshops that people can sell, and that the people who've been the early adopters will get a nice kind of collectible edition, but the other edition goes into shops will be treated like everything else. But it just means suddenly, instead of it being can I fit my idea as a writer into what publishers are telling me that other people want, why don't I just go and ask those other people whether they're interested? If I can get enough of them, I can get my book out there into the market. That's sort of, insofar as what we're doing is radical, that's all it is. It's just letting readers and writers have direct contact with one another. And so far, we've had 12 books successfully funded. We've got a list of 40 books coming up. I think we're doing okay. We're probably trading a little ahead of where we thought we'd be financially. We've raised some money in order to continue. But the main thing for me is scrub all that out of the way. We're having fantastic fun. Just wish I didn't, I just wish I could clone myself, because there are so many fantastic proposals. I mean, I had more interesting proposals in the last 6 months than I had in 10 years in publishing. And I think it's because what I love is that it's so direct. You go onto the site, people tell you if you're doing wrong. I mean, we had a major, major horror show before Christmas. We Can Be Heroes was supposed to be in time for Christmas. Problem with the printers in Germany. We had to send a lorry over. We had to send a driver over to Germany to get the stock back. We brought the stock back to this shop, and we told everybody, if you want your book for Christmas, you're going to have to come to the Cycle Club in Soho and pick it up personally. Amazing thing was, I don't think we've lost a single customer through this whole period, and it has been really difficult. It has involved a lot of emails. But basically, it was, people are on our side. People want this idea to work. They've enjoyed it, and that, I think the other thing is, it sort of matters that the books that we publish are good and that they're well produced and they're beautifully produced. But one of the things, again, that used to come out of my Waterstones research that's driven me mad about publishing is people love books, physical objects. They want them to be printed on good paper. They want them to be nicely bound. They want them to be the objects of desire that they could be. Most publishing just has given up on that. Even Faber now, they say, it doesn't matter, we'll print it. We'll print digitally, we won't sew and bind, nobody cares. So it's kind of self-fulfilling. If you produce shit product, people in the end get used to shit product, and they don't, why should they pay £20 for it? It's not worth £20. Because we're not having to pay 60% to Waterstones or Smiths or any of the others, it means we can invest a little bit more, for our subscribers at least, for the people who are early adopters in producing beautiful copies of the books. And do have a look at them, because I'm very proud of all three of the books so far that have come out. And there are a load more coming out, which I think will be equally interesting. But what it's sort of about is kind of paradox that we're using the internet to try and save something that is as analogue as you could possibly be. I mean, I think if we're going to survive, if books are going to survive as objects, we're just going to have to be smarter about how we market them and how we produce them. There is nothing wrong. There's nobody out there who's saying, that I don't think that books are somehow intrinsically. They're just beautiful technology. Simple, easy to use, portable, gorgeous technology. The only people who are down on books that I ever hear are publishers. They're the only people who are telling me that the book is doomed. And in general, my whole life has been about it. Publishers are telling me that something is right. I know instinctively it must be wrong. That's probably enough. Do look and finger and sniff the books. They're all for sale. But thank you for your time.
There's two books over there, aren't they?
And one book down there.
So there's the We Can Be Heroes there.